Welcome to Lamenting the Leafs, a pre-playoff edition. I'm Cam, along with Nick and Nicholas. Before we get into the end of the regular season here and start teeing up another playoff series against the Bruins, we're short a co-host, and I mean, you guys love to bag on Keith because of all of his traveling, you know, because his job is kind of a mystery to us. So
we're going
to
throw this out there, are we?
the joke is that, you know, Keith, secret drug dealer. You know, we always bust his balls about that. And I leave that to you guys, right? But then this week when Keith said that he didn't think he'd be able to make the recording because he'd be in Costa Rica for 8 days. I mean, that's just a bridge too far, if you ask me. So I'm on the bandwagon now, too. Hopefully Keith has filed his taxes, and there's no one listening that might have reason to poke around such a thing.
To be clear, we are joking.
it's just you and I for the time being. And I did look, and I think that I would say that the boat trip from like St. John to Boston is about the same as Costa Rica to Colombia. I did take a quick peek at that. But Nick, season's done. Leafs and Bruins lined up once again, and lots to talk about there. But one kind of big point to talk about, I think, off the top, the biggest storyline, obviously, with the Leafs down the stretch, Auston Matthews falling just shy of 70 goals, and not because they rested him. You know, he went right through the end. I think 24, 27 shots in the last three games and one goal to show for it or something like that. So at the very least, I guess I hope he's pissed off going into game one.
Yeah, I mean, Sheldon Keefe alluded to it after game 82. Like, you give Auston those shots and those looks in that situation more often than not, he would have been able to pot five or six and get up well above 70. But the puck didn't fall for him. I think the one that's really going to stick in a lot of people's minds is the move he made against the Lightning on Wednesday night, down on one knee, back up, and wired it past Matt Tompkins, but just couldn't beat Iron. So, you know, for him to sit on 69 goals and also lead the league with hitting the post or crossbar 20 times, I mean, 69 or 70, it's a remarkable season. I know everyone would have liked to see him get to that nice round number. But it wasn't meant to be, as he said. And the focus just has to quickly shift to the big games coming up against the Bruins here.
Yeah, it's not a terribly nice 69, is it? I mean, it's good, but you'd like to get to the 70. I mean, usually I'd take a 69 wherever you offer it, but
yeah, I've got nothing on that.
But I mean, yeah, it's you know, tough stretch. You know, these last few games, obviously, you get blown out a few times.
But it's obvious, like, they weren't playing hockey, right? Like, I don't know if you listened to Kipper and Bourne's show yesterday at all, but like, they were all talking about how it didn't even really feel like a hockey game. I think you could take that even into the one against Florida. I mean, there was something for the Panthers to play for in their final game there that, you know, bumped them up to first in the Atlantic Division. But Wednesday night against Tampa, it didn't feel like a hockey game. It felt like Tampa trying their damnedest to get Kucherov to 100 assists and the Leafs trying their damnedest to get Auston to 70 goals. And beyond that, it was a tough watch.
Yeah. And the Lightning trying their best to keep Auston from 70. They had a man-to-man coverage all night.
And, you know, more credit to Kipper and Bourne. They made another great point on that show. It looks more selfish, for lack of a better term, to be like chasing a goal, or it's more difficult for one guy to be chasing that goal than for Kucherov to be kind of chasing assists. You know, they get on the power play, they're all moving the puck around, dishing it around. Yeah, sure, they're all, if it comes off Kucherov's stick, the next guy is looking to fire it at the net. But it didn't look as, I don't know, like they were keyholed on getting that for Kucherov as much as it might have looked that way for the Leafs and Auston, if that makes any sense. And you just have to hope that they're able to quickly pivot off of that and, you know, not be completely locked in on that one thing heading into the playoffs here.
Yeah, that's the key. I mean, you'd probably like to see a few less goals against those last few games,
yeah,
especially considering the way that you can't seemingly go a week without completely throwing the goaltending question up in the air and not really knowing what the hell is going on the following week, right? So it's like,
how did you feel about how they handled the goaltending over the last week? Like, it's going to be about a week between starts for Samsonov by the time, assuming he's the game one starter, which I think is a pretty safe assumption at this point, he's going to be off for a little while here and not exactly riding high off of his last couple of starts either.
Yeah, and I mean, I think that, you know, rolling Jones out there for the last game is like the obvious play, right? But like, just where you've had so much kind of back and forth and not really knowing who the guy is, it would have been maybe a little nicer to see Jones not come in and get popped, which again, the game was what it was. It was not like a regular game, but just knowing that, like, it's not completely out of the question that you're gonna have to turn to this guy at some point here if things go a little bit deep.
I mean, if they get to that point, they're fucked anyway, right?
Like, yeah, that's fair enough. And I mean, I think that it is the play to maybe give Samsonov that little bit of time to
he's been good coming off the reset and stuff, right?
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, like, I think that just on principle, you know, not starting Samsonov for those last two games is like, look at those teams. Like, you know, yeah, very possible that you have to run into one of them. Like, they're obviously facing each other and, you know, they're rough and tumble and, you know, they know what the next couple of weeks are going to look like. So no need to put either Samsonov or, I mean, Wall got the Panthers, but, you know, no need for Samsonov to have to face those guys, I think.
I think that's why it was big to leave him in the Saturday night game where the Leafs were able to mount a comeback and make it a game again. I know a lot of people were calling for Samsonov to be pulled after that first period where he was not good, you know, for a second straight start. But I think, you know, you pull him in that spot and that's the lingering memory that not only the fans mm-hmm. have, but that's what's in Samsonov's mind the next time he steps out there. I think the fact that
you need runway for that kind of a play, right? Like, yeah, you need some runway because, like, if you pull him there, there's no chance for him to get feeling good again before.
Yeah, I don't think there would have been a difference between pulling him after the first period when he gave up four and, you know, you give him a look to start the second period and maybe he gives up the fifth one and you pull him then. I don't think there's much difference between those two things. But, you know, taking the chance that he could be involved in somewhat of a comeback, which is how it played out. Ultimately, they didn't win the game, but the fact that he was able to kind of lock it down for those final 40 minutes and just be a part of the team clawing back in, I think was really important.
Yep. So game one against the Bruins Saturday night. And so our first Bruins series as a pod, we were a little over a year too late for the last one, 2019. And I mean, like, before we dig right into this, like, just kind of feels like you got to do it, doesn't it? You know, no, yeah, Bergeron, no Chara. Like, what's the excuse at this point? You have to get this done.
Yeah, and I think that's kind of being missed by a lot of people talking about this, is that it has been a long time since these two teams faced off in the playoffs. Like, we're talking about, this is the final year of William Nylander's current deal. The last time the Leafs and Bruins played in the postseason was the first year of this current deal, where he missed the first couple months of the season, really never got his legs under him, finished the season with what, like 7 or 8 goals in 50 some games. And he didn't have it that year. And that feels like a lifetime ago, right? And I think that's important to remember heading into this series. These are two very different teams. The Bruins have had the Leafs number in the regular season, but I don't think that really means a whole lot of anything at this time of year. It's a fresh start for everybody. And it's a new opportunity for a new iteration of the Leafs to flip that narrative and slay the dragon.
Yeah, and I mean, you mentioned Nylander. Like, he's taken a huge step since that playoff series, right? Like, basically,
he's
ever since then,
a completely different player.
Yeah, he's been money every playoff series, right? So, and, you know, talking about some of the form of some of these guys going into the series, I mean, Nylander hasn't exactly been himself, you know, through this last 3-4 weeks. So you obviously will hope that form in the playoffs will pick right back up again, starting Saturday night with him.
I think he has earned some benefit of the doubt, not only with how he's played for the majority of this past season and last year as well, but the fact that you alluded to, he's always kind of stepped up in the playoffs. But it is kind of concerning that this little mini slump, or whatever you want to call it, to end the season for Nylander sort of coincided with Keith changing up his forward deployment and kind of spreading things out across three lines. So that part is slightly concerning, I guess. But on the whole, I'm not really concerned about Nylander just because of what he's shown us in the past and his ability to kind of block out the noise and really step up when it matters. I didn't think he was fantastic against Tampa in the first round last year, but in that Florida series, he was pretty much the only thing the Leafs had going. And that was just kind of a continuation of what we had seen from him the year prior. So, yeah, I'm not overly concerned about Nylander. And I think that he's still going to get his minutes with the big boys. We've seen it down the stretch a little bit. Yeah, Nylander's been listed on the third line with Holmberg and Robertson to begin the game more often than not. But he's gotten his fair share of run alongside Tavares and Marner as well. So, like, it's no secret to anyone who's paid attention to this team or listened to the show or any other kind of Leafs media over the last couple of years, like Sheldon Keefe is the tinkerer. He's gonna mix things up in game. And I know he takes a lot of flack for that sometimes, but I think it's a big strength for him as a coach that he's able to kind of find those minutes for guys in the proper situations more often than not. So I think Nylander is going to have a chance to be a real X factor in this series as a player who can maybe feast on some easier matchups lower in the lineup, but also help load up that top six when the situation calls for it.
Yeah, I mean, his track record, like you said, it's so strong at this point that it would take him really being quiet in those first two games in Boston before I got even a bit concerned, I think. I think he'll be there.
Yeah.
So, I mean, Nick, this is obviously a bit of a different look heading into the playoffs for the Leafs. You know, this is kind of what we've been obviously waiting for. Like, every season these last few, it's like you're just waiting for the regular season to be done, but it felt even more so this year where you've got guys like Bertuzzi and Domi, and the stated goal is that these guys are going to be playoff guys, and you're not as worried about how you get there as you are, you know, what you do when you're there. So, and I think that there is a bit of, you know, reason for optimism there. Like, this is kind of where I stand with it. Like, the hope I have for this forward group, like the depth guys, right? So, like, basically everyone beyond the four star guys, is that, like, they are not only setting the tone, but setting a tone that we have not seen from this group in years past, right? Like, you look at the guys they've relied on previously, Kerfoot, Mikheyev, Engvall, you know, those guys played the system. You know, you wanted them to bridge the gap till you can get the stars back out there again.
But that's all it ever felt like, right?
Exactly. And if nothing ever happened at all, that's good, until it's not good because the stars aren't giving you what you need to get in their minutes. And then, you know, you can't justify playing that way if you're not getting that. And then suddenly, you know, you're finding yourself watching the third and fourth lines thinking, geez, really wish something would happen out there.
Yeah.
You know, and you look at, like, the best teams, right? Like Dallas, that's a team that's got firepower all the way down the lineup. Vegas, same thing. You know, the Rangers, like that's what you're looking for. And I don't think that, at the very least with this group, like the watching the bottom six, hoping something would happen, that's not going to be the problem. I don't think there might be other problems, but I don't think that it's going to be that nothing's happening. And I don't know that they quite have the firepower to stack up with all of those top teams, but at the very least, I think you're going to be getting something when your stars aren't on the ice, and hopefully that's enough, because it's been the margins have been so close in some of these series in the past, right?
Yeah, well, it has the potential to take some of the pressure off of the top guys as well, right? Like, they're watching the same thing that you're just talking about, right? Like, they're sitting on the bench and watching those third and fourth lines go out and basically punt. So, you know, they're going out there maybe gripping it a little tighter, feeling like they need to absolutely make something happen on every shift. And I don't think that's the case with this version of the team. And even beyond, like, all the talk of secondary scoring and things like that, I think there's a lot of guys up and down this lineup who can help out and contribute. Even, like, if the puck's not going in for them, you know, a guy like Matthew Nyes is going to be disruptive on the forecheck and really make guys pay physically. And I think he's going to take that to another level, even beyond what we've seen to this point, now that he's more comfortable in the league, has a full season under him. Then you've got, like, you know, assuming he's going to be healthy at some point here, and we really don't know, Bobby McMahon has shown a lot in the second half, and he's a guy who's been really strong at both ends of the ice and it, like, plays that straight line, fast sort of physical game. I just think there's a lot more versatility in the forward group, and they have the ability to get guys to fill different roles than they have in the past, where it kind of felt like guys like Mikheyev and Engvall and Kerfoot were all kind of the same player, more or less. And they were just never really, you know, not to besmirch Kerfoot, who scored a massive overtime winner against Tampa last year. I swore I would never say a bad word about him again after that. But the fact remains, he was just not really an impact player on many occasions. And it just felt like you were holding your breath for the big guys to get back out there. And it just doesn't feel that way this year. Sure, there's a bit of push and pull there with the defensive side of the game. The Leafs were obviously not as strong defensively this past season as they had been in previous years, but I think kind of balances out a bit, or we'll see anyways, with the ability to get contributions from more places throughout their lineup in terms of scoring and other things like that.
Yeah, I mean, I do feel like there's something about this mix that kind of makes me feel a little differently. It makes me feel like things can turn out maybe differently.
They don't feel like they're going to wilt at all, like in any situation, right? Like it seems like Everyone's got some, I don't know, we've used the word snot a lot, or piss and vinegar or whatever, but it seems like there's just a more competitive nature for the team as a whole.
Yeah, and I mean, I think that you can chalk that up to a few things. Like, you know, beyond Reeves, you aren't relying on hired guns to supply the toughness, right? Like you've brought in guys who bring some sandpaper while also being skilled players, Bertuzzi, Domi. And, you know, those three guys that I mentioned, Reeves, Bertuzzi, Domi, like they seem to have the ear of these guys, the top guys, particularly Matthews,
In
a way that kind of gives me some hope that like they can kind of pull them into the fight in a way that the depth groups couldn't in the past. So that's kind of another angle that
we haven't really had that since Naz, right? And that's been always the big thing for me. Like after Kadri was dealt away, it was like it felt like this team didn't have a fire starter. And now this version of the club feels like there's a couple guys like that on the team. And we've touched on it throughout the season too. Like having Reeves down there is great. It was great having Wayne Simmonds or Kyle Clifford in that fourth line role, but there's a big difference between that and having that sort of sandpaper and fire and competitive nature from guys higher in your lineup. And you've got that with Bertuzzi and Domi, and I think even Matthew Nyes to an extent. And you're hoping that it kind of imprints itself upon the rest of the group. And you've got it on the back end as well. I think guys like Simone Benoit and Jake McCabe are going to be absolutely massive in this playoff run, however long it goes. If the Leafs are going to find any success, I think those two guys are going to be huge parts of it on the back end. So, yeah, there's just a lot more to feel good about in terms of the attitude and competitiveness of the team, I think.
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned about Kadri, right? And like the difference is like it's the core, like it's coming from the core. Whereas, you know, like obviously Kadri was a core guy, you know, Bertuzzi, Domi, you might not call them core parts of the Leafs, but in terms of the 23-24 Leafs, they are part of the core without a doubt. So like it needs to come from, you know, the call needs to come from inside the house.
Yeah.
And I have more hope that that's what's going to be happening, I guess.
Yeah, you just got. I think Domi's probably going to be fine. He probably would have played in those last couple of games had they been postseason games. So, you know, hopefully he's right around 100% when things get going here on Saturday night, because he's grown into such an important piece of this team. You know, whether you want to label him as a core member because he's only on a 1-year deal or not, as you said, he's a huge part of this year's team, no matter how you slice it. And I think he and Bertuzzi, maybe to, you know, a lesser extent, their ability to kind of play with Matthews and have them elevate their games alongside Matthews is really a catalyst for how Keefe is going to be able to deploy the rest of his lineup. And if those guys weren't able to find that level alongside Matthews, we'd be looking at a very similar kind of makeup to what we've seen in the past. So I think they're really emblematic of the difference in this year's team compared to years past.
Yeah, and you mentioned McMahon a moment ago. Obviously, you're hoping that he's not only ready to play game one, but 100%, because I mean,
I'm not as confident in that.
Yeah. And that sucks, right? Because like the element he has brought, like it's obviously, you know, he's chipped in some goals, but it's not just the scoring. It's the consistency that's shocked me, that the consistency with which he is able to beat guys wide with speed as a big guy And he's doing this to NHL defenders regularly. You know, it's not like an occasional thing where he, you know, manages to catch someone, you know, unawares and blow by and get a chance. Like, he is out muscling guys every single night. And
he can shoot it in the
net. Yeah, and you need that strength, that ability to kind of open things up, you know, with the puck, but also just to cause some damage down low, and you know, you got to soften up these defenses. It's going to be a long series, so you know, the more physicality you can get, especially out of guys who are also contributing on the offensive side of things, that's key. So really, really hope that he'll be good to go sooner than later.
Yeah, we talked about it on our last episode, the fact that he's grown into a really important piece of this lineup, and I think you have outlined it really well there. He's come into his own as a really versatile two-way guy who can do a lot of things for you, and you know, again, we'll kind of besmirch the guys who were here in the past. They were never the guys that were going to get in and change the momentum of a game. And you feel like there's at least a chance with guys like McMahon or Knies and Bertuzzi and Domi as well, that they can have a moment like that. And, you know, those are the things that oftentimes a playoff series comes down to, is an unsung hero kind of moment. And I think there's just a lot more potential for something like that to happen with this group.
Yeah. I mean, I think ultimately you look at this forward group, and, you know, I think that there was that perceived step back in the off season, right? Like the expectations shifted somewhat, not just up front, but I think, you know, overall the expectations for the team were a little bit different. But, you know, here we are at the end of the season. They are just slightly off of their usual, you know, points output at the end of the season, and probably would have been a little closer if they hadn't just punted on those last few games, basically. But, you know, now you're at the fun part. You know, these are the guys that you brought in. They're supposed to shine. So I think that's like the rosy view of it, right? Is that you got back here basically unscathed in terms of, you know, the points, you know, the standings. And this is the part where you've been planning for. This is the thing you've been planning for. This is where these guys are, you know, supposed to step up and do what you signed them to do, right? So
yep.
I think that's the positive way to look at it, is that, like, it's, you're not just kind of cruising into the playoffs the way you have in the past with, you know, the same lineups all the time. There's been a little bit more of a struggle, but
yep,
largely, you know, you still got a pretty damn strong team, and at least on paper, the play style now should suit you a little better. So that's what I'm clinging to, Nick.
Yeah, I think that is the rosy view of things. I think if you're going to take maybe a less rosy view of things, you move beyond the forwards and get to the back end and some of the struggles that the Leafs have had there this season. Who's your six for game one? Because I think there's, you know, there's a lot of options there, but I don't know if any of them are exactly ideal.
Boy, yeah, I mean, that's
like, for me, Labushkin's not playing game one. He's been god awful, man. There's no one I trust less with the puck on their stick than Ilya Labushkin. I know he does other things well, but we've seen this team struggle so often in the past, in the postseason, with just not being able to handle that forecheck and move the puck out of their own end. And those forwards aren't going to be able to get to work if the Leafs can't get out of their own end. And for me, yeah, Labushkin's on the outside looking in for game one just because of that. I know a lot of people have been critical of Brody this year, and it's been well-deserved at times, but I still trust him more than I trust Labushkin at this point.
Yeah, and that's a tough look for a guy that you know, gave up assets to bring in to be part of the playoff
Who
lineup.
Could have seen that coming? Wow.
Yeah. But
for me, I think I'm going, like, probably Riley, Edmondson, and Benoit, Brody, and I'd probably lean on those two more as, like, my top pair, even if you've got Riley and Edmondson listed higher than them on the game sheet or whatever. Like, I don't think Edmondson's at the point anymore where you can rely on him to play 22 plus minutes in a game. So I'd be leaning on Benoit and McCabe until they showed me that I can't. And beyond that, I'm probably going Brody and Liljegren on that third pair, because I like what I saw of those two together for a stretch earlier this season. And I think you've got to have Liljegren in there. Like, it's now or never for him, kind of, right? And I think he brings sort of a unique skill set to the back end compared to some of the other more butcher types of players that they have in guys like Edmondson or Benoit or Labushkin. Liljegren has the ability to move that puck out of the zone when he's playing at his best. And I think if Liljegren is at his best, he is one of the best four or five defensemen on this team, no question. It's a matter of whether he's going to be able to play at that level in the postseason. But now's the time. You've got to have a look at it and see what you've really got in this guy.
Yeah, I mean, that's the big question. And really, it's one guy who you know, the question kind of centers around, right? It's TJ Brody. Like, what do they do with Brody? Because, like, I'm looking at, you know, the kind of pairings breakdown from the last 10 games or so, and Brody is pretty clearly, from this trend, the guy who they just kind of can't find a place for. Like, obviously you've got, you know, you mentioned Benoit McCabe, like that's seemingly going to be locked together. I can't imagine that being broken up unless they really need to change things up.
As much as Keith likes to tinker and move guys around, I think, like, that's probably the duo or pairing that you're going to see pretty much static for most of this year.
Yeah, and I mean, I guess it does kind of hinge on Labushkin, because Riley's kind of been staple to him when they've both been in the lineup. So, you know, do they change that up? And maybe it's Brody who goes back there because of familiarity. I don't think I'd like it either.
It's familiar, but it's been familiarly terrible, you know, especially this season. They've really fallen off as a pairing. I think, like I said, I'd probably go Riley, Edmondson, then you have Liljegren in on that third pair, and you mix things up a little bit with Liljegren out there with Riley for some offensive zone starts, and maybe Barry Edmondson in the defensive zone a little bit more. I think the fact that Edmondson can sort of do his thing on either side of the ice, it doesn't really matter as much to him, it makes him kind of more valuable in that sense, just because you can sort of move him around and play him in the proper situations. That's how I'm starting things off, but I won't be surprised if it is in fact Labushkin in the lineup to start the series.
Yeah, I think that I'm pretty much in line with you on that. I would kind of be surprised if he doesn't at least get game one, and then we'll see. But
you don't want to be spending those bullets like at this time of year, like, okay, well, if we lose, we'll change things up, because that can get away from you in an awful hurry at this time of year. And I think you've got to try and start with your best foot forward. Maybe Keith feels differently about what that is than you or I do, or anyone else. We'll just have to wait and see, I guess. But not feeling great about Labushkin and the deal to acquire him.
Yeah, no, I think that I agree with your six. That's probably how I'd line it up too. What about up front? Are you Reeves guy? Are you Robertson guy? What kind of deployment are you thinking, and who's going to end up sitting game one?
Well, it's going to come down to some health questions here, right? Like, if McMahon's out, I think Robertson's obviously in. Robertson's ahead of Gregor at this point. I don't think there's any question about that. So Gregor's the one guy who's clearly on the outside looking in to start the series here. Then, you know, the McMahon question plays into it. And you've also got Yarncroke. You don't really know. And he's played, one game in the second half of the season here, basically. So, but you also, like, you know how important he has been to this team. So I don't think you have any reservations about throwing him in there. Maybe you try to ease him in to begin the series, but if he's ready to go, he's got to be in there just because of all the different things that he can provide to this lineup. I've got Reeves in for game one at the very least. I just think that he's had a massive turnaround, man. Like, he looked like a guy who was completely done, couldn't skate, couldn't keep up in this league. And, you know, that little hiatus with whatever knee injury he had that he was recovering from, like, he deserves a ton of credit for how he's battled back and made himself into, you know, someone you can throw out there in fourth line minutes, but a guy you can throw out there in fourth line minutes and get something out of. Like, he's been really strong on the forecheck. It's been more than just like throwing guys around. It's been that functional physicality that helps keep that line in the offensive zone. And he's not completely inept with the puck on his stick either. Like, he's not going to blow the doors off of anybody, but he more often than not kind of makes the smart play when the puck does get on his stick. He's not going to dangle anybody or anything like that. But I think he mostly knows what he's doing out there, and he just brings a different element than anyone else, not only in this lineup, but, you know, than most guys in this league. He's a unique kind of player. So, again, kind of like Liljegren, if you're getting Reeves at his best, I think that's a very important player in this series who can make a difference on that fourth line.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, we were talking about softening up that defense. I mean, Bruins are going to come at you hard, right? Like, this is a team
that... Yeah, you want to take it back to them, right?
Yeah, I mean, they've managed to put this together with a club that is, you know, undoubtedly not as skilled as others they've iced in the past. Like, up front, there's a lot of kind of workhorse guys who are just going to go out there and just try to outskate you and outhit you, and you got to be ready for that. And I mean, I would love to see him just put a absolute wailing on Trent Frederick in game one.
Yeah, put a wailing on Trent Frederick, put Charlie McAvoy through the end boards. Like, you know full well, Ryan Reeves is going to be amped as hell to start the playoffs. And I think that he's got enough experience in this league, enough experience in the postseason to still kind of stay within himself and bring those elements. So yeah, I think he could be a really important piece, at least to start the series. You know, maybe if you go down and the secondary scoring is not clicking, or you need a little bit more speed, maybe another penalty kill option, you look at some of the other guys. But yeah, he's in to start the series for me, and I've got to eat some crow, man. Like, I was super critical of not only the signing, but his level of play to start the season. Like I said, he didn't look like a guy who could hang in this league at all anymore. And he's turned it around to the point where he's a guy that I'm very, very happy to have on my fourth line heading into the playoffs.
Yeah, I'd be surprised if he didn't start game one. That said, I do think that you have to kind of keep in mind that should probably be the first change you make if things don't really go the way you want up front, and if you feel like you need a little bit more offensive punch. But I mean, you know, we were talking about it with regards to, like, you know, you sign these guys, you bring them in for this purpose, and
yeah,
you know, now that you've gotten to this point and it's looking like it does, like, I'd be stunned if he isn't out there for game one. Like, this, you know, this is a new season, and I talked about how, you know, maybe the offseason moves reduced the expectations at the start of the season, and I think that they probably, you know, you get it on the back end now heading into the playoffs, because this is what these guys have been gearing up for, right? This is what the plan has been for.
Not only that, right? Like, yeah, the team maybe wasn't as crisp or sharp in the first portion of the season as you would have liked, but there's a lot of new guys coming in, different style of play for a lot of these guys than what Sheldon Keefe has had to work with in the past. But you look at, you know, ever since the All-Star break, where things have really started to mesh for this club, they've been one of the best teams in the league. They've been one of the highest scoring teams in the league. So you just have to hope that they're able to shake off those last few games, which I don't put a lot of stock into what happened in the last handful of games in the regular season. Like I said, they were kind of just coasting. They were locked into third place, more or less, at that point. I just think that they're going to be able to flip the switch, and maybe they don't win or dominate or anything like that, but I don't think that we're going to see the same kind of coasting their way through I don't think it's going to take them long to turn it up now that the games are back to being so important, right? So that's where I'm at with it. Should we move on to the Bruins here and talk about the opposition a little bit, or?
Fuck them.
Yeah, I'm fully on board with that. I mean, I think if you look at it on paper, you know, obviously the games are played on ice and not on paper, but where do you see an advantage for the Bruins beyond in goal and maybe the high end of their blue line? Like, I don't think that their forward group matches up anywhere close to what the Leafs can throw out there. Now, obviously, the Bruins are incredibly well coached. They play to their system extremely well, and they've always been able to find a way. But, like, this isn't Patrice Bergeron that's going to be matched up against Austin Matthews this time around. It's not even going to be David Krejci. We're talking about Charlie Coyle and Pavel Zacha. And I mean, full credit to those guys for the seasons that they had, but we're talking about a completely different level here.
Yeah, I mean, up front, it's clear. It's no contest, right? Like, you should be overwhelming them. And that's going to be the canary in the coal mine, right? Is if you're kind of coming out there and you're playing their forwards even a lot, or you know, you're maybe just kind of getting the edge occasionally. But, like, if they are really kind of making it a contest up front, that's bad news. Because, like you said, the goaltending, clearly in their favor. I think that you would go defense in their favor as well. You know, you got McAvoy, you got Lindholm.
Yeah,
I mean, they've got some good.
Brandon Carlo's a good player. Grizzlick can get Carlo, it done too.
They picked up Andrew Peak, so they got like some big guys. You know, some guys are going to bang you around a bit. I would probably take their blue line, but again, it's the goaltending is where it comes down to, because if you're going to rank the goaltenders in the series, I think you're going Bruins 1-2.
Absolutely. They've got two. What would you call them? Top 8, top 10 goaltenders in the league, and they've got two.
Yeah, I guess. And they're gonna. Goaltending to me is just. I look at these two guys and I'm like, fucking wait for the bottom's falling out anytime now, anytime.
But we've been saying that about the Bruins in general for how many fucking years now, right? Like, we're talking about a team.
And Swayman, I mean, you look at Swayman's career numbers already, and it's like, oh damn, this guy might be just really fucking good.
Yeah, like Linus Ullmark won the Vezina Trophy last year, and he's almost been like usurped by Swayman. I know that they've mostly rotated for the entire season, but like that in itself. Having a guy who won the Vezina last year go into a full-blown game-for-game rotation the following season, it just says a lot about their embarrassment of riches in net. And if the Bruins are going to win this series, I think it's going to be on the back of their goaltending. And the Leafs just have to find a way to not let that happen. They need to get it done at the offensive end like they've shown capable of all season long. It just has to carry into the postseason now.
Well, and special teams are going to be key, right? Because, I mean...
That's the other feather in the Bruins cap, probably.
They have got a guy over there who is going to kill you on the power play if you give him opportunities. And, you know, the Leafs have not been so hot in that area. So you're going to have to finish on yours, and you're going to have to limit their power play opportunities and at the very least try to, you know...
They need to come close to break even on special teams, I think, if they're going to win this series. I think that that's another spot outside of goaltending where the Bruins probably have a really clear advantage is on special teams. But we saw some, you know, positive signs out of the Leafs kill down the stretch. It's going to be a matter of whether they're able to sustain that into the playoffs here, because like you said, Pasternak is absolute nightmare fuel over on that flank with the man advantage. So they're going to have to stay out of the box, and that's going to be a tricky thing to do in a series with so much heat and for a team in the Leafs who are looking to establish themselves more as that kind of rough and tumble, gritty sandpaper team. There's going to be a line to toe there in terms of, you know, making your mark in that way, but not going overboard and getting into a ton of penalty trouble.
Yeah, that's going to be one of the key indicators for sure. What do you think? What's your prediction, bud?
I ain't going there. But I will say this.
Come on now.
No, I'm not doing it. My predictions have been too terrible. I feel a certain way about this series, and I'm not going to throw it out there into the world, so make of that what you will. What I will say is, you know, I saw a lot of people kind of having post-traumatic stress disorder flare-ups when it was official that the Leafs are going to be taking on the Bruins again in the first round. But to me, like, who fucking cares? Like, was Florida going to be easy? Is Tampa going to be easy? Like, none of these teams are going to be easy. I think it's all built up trauma from the Leafs themselves more so than whatever opponent they're playing. And like, I made this joke a couple of years ago on Twitter, and it kind of blew up heading into the playoffs. Like, I'm not scared of the Bruins. I'm not scared of the Lightning, not scared of the Panthers. I am, however, fucking terrified of the Leafs. And that's still what it comes down to for me. I think if this team plays to their capabilities, they're going to be able to make a run here. So I just think, to get where they want to go, they're going to have to beat more than one good team. So as far as I'm concerned, Boston, Tampa, Florida in the first round doesn't really fucking matter.
Leafs in six.
Let's go.
I don't know which way you're leaning though, because you were like, oh well, I'll leave it at that. But then what you said made me think that you were thinking the Leafs will lose. But then what you said made me think that the Leafs will win. So maybe you should just give us a prediction.
I think that the Leafs should win this series. I think that they match up better against the Bruins than they would have against the Panthers. But again, it's the margins are so thin at this time of year when you're talking about teams of this caliber. Like, you look at the standings and yeah, Boston finished however many points ahead of the Leafs. What's the difference there? A couple of wins over an 82 game schedule, or a shootout loss here and there rather than a regulation loss? I think everyone is so evenly matched. And it's really just, it's a crapshoot, man. But I do think that the Leafs match up better against the Bruins. I don't think that the Bruins have the kind of shutdown sort of forwards that the Panthers have. I think that should present a bit of an easier road for some of the Leafs' dynamic offensive talents to do their thing. But again, like, anyone taking any of these teams lightly, I don't know what to tell you. Like, at this time of year, anyone can get it done. And yeah, fuck it. Leafs in six.
Yes. There it is.
I'm putting this on you. If it goes the other way, you drew that out of me.
You want to remember a Leaf?
Yeah, let's go. Let's have it.
You remember Brian Leetch?
Yeah. I mean, who doesn't?
I know. That was going to be such a more glorious story. Damn lockout. I pick him, obviously, because for whatever reason, Brian Leetch is the first name that pops into my mind when I think Leafs and Bruins. No idea why.
Is he a Boston guy?
He's from Texas, but he's from Corpus Christi, which I specifically remember for some reason. But no, he signed with the Bruins out of the lockout, if you recall.
Okay.
He was a Bruin for a very brief time, which is also something that people probably maybe don't remember, but I think it was only a season.
Well, how many games did we even get of Brian Leetch as a Leaf?
Oh, it was like 10 or something.
Yeah, just wasn't much.
Real quick.
It is a bit nostalgic, though, going back to like those days of the trade deadline, you know, where it felt like the Leafs could just basically buy whoever they wanted at the time, you know, in the days before the salary cap, for some of our younger listeners.
That was a sexy pickup. Oh, baby, that was a sexy pickup. Well, for anyone who's not familiar with the pre-salary cap era, that one was a buzzer of a move.
Well, there was like those couple deadlines they kind of blend together in my mind where, you know, the Leafs brought in like Glenn Wesley, Phil Housley, Brian Leetch, Owen Nolan, like,
yeah, Gilmore before the injury.
Gilmore,
a lot of those were 03. Yeah, a lot of those were 03. Leetch was 04 for sure. So Leetch, it was 15 games in the regular season, 15 points. And then, games in the playoffs, 8 assists.
First ballot Hall of Famer, and we barely got a look.
It was going to be a beautiful season, 04-05. Really was.
Why do we have to end the show on that note, bud? Like, come on now.
Buddy, you find me the good note to end on, and I'll end on it.
Leafs in six.
Go Leafs, go.